Hello and welcome to day 23 of the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. We promised you Tron fans a treat, and today's the day. Let's open the door.
Hey everyone, it's Ty Singh again. This new episode of the Cosmic Shed features an interview I did with David Warner for my book, Born to be Bad, Talking to the Greatest Villains in Action Cinema. For those of you unfamiliar with David Warner, you might not know the name, but you definitely know the face. He played Evil in The Time Bandits. He played Jack the Ripper in Time After Time. He's Sark in Tron. He's been in Star Trek numerous times as Chancellor Gorkon in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and as Golmaset in, was it Golmadred? Who knows? In Star Trek The Next Generation, who tortures Jean-Luc Picard. And most famously, he played Billy Zane's body man in Titanic. Anyway, I was speaking to David all about these kind of villainous roles that he's played, and he was a great guy to talk to. So I hope you enjoy this interview. And if you like David and are a fan of his work, check out Mary Poppins Returns in cinemas now. Enjoy. Mr. Warner.
Yes, sir. I'm expecting your call dead on time.
Well, I kind of wanted to start off with you at the Royal Shakespeare Company, because obviously you played many roles throughout your career. And do you feel that Shakespeare kind of wrote some of the most rounded and compelling villains? And from your point of view, who was the most fun to play?
Well, I didn't play any villains.
Really?
I played Hamlet, Richard II, Henry VI, but none of them were villains.
That surprises me.
It's very interesting because the villains I've played, because I made, you know, X amount of movies and TV things, are really a minority of what I've done.
I think it's probably because when I think of you in all the roles that you've played, you're often the villain or you have sinister motives. So it would have, I guess it's that assumption that when you started off in Shakespeare, you were maybe pigeonholed in those roles, and that's something
That doesn't happen in the theatre so much. It happens on film and television. Well, tell me first of all, what the films that you've seen that I was in that made you, you know, want to call me?
It's the films I kind of grew up, such as Time After Time, Bandits, Tron, obviously. Then kind of your roles in Titanic, and then also Golmadred in Star Trek The Next Generation, where you tortured Patrick Stewart. So I think it was growing up with all those roles, in my mind it's always, apart from things like in The Omen, where you know, you lose your head.
But I wasn't a villain in that.
Exactly, but I've always often thought of you as you giving good villainous roles in... That's how you were generally cast.
I was cast, but always I managed to put in something not villainous in between, which didn't necessarily, you know, attract the attention of people such as yourself. You know what I mean? For every villain I played, I'd like to play, for example, if you know Christmas Carol. Well, I was able to play Bob Cratchit in that.
Okay.
Who is, you know, his employee with the family and, you know, the goose at the air, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
A sympathetic character. So, and also I was in a big, huge miniseries years ago called The Holocaust.
Yes.
Which was you know, and I played a real live Nazi.
Heydrich.
Who was Heydrich, yeah. Correct. But before I did The Holocaust, I knew I was also going to play for British television William Wordsworth, the poet.
Yeah.
So you see what I'm trying to say? You know, otherwise you'd go mad if you only played villains.
Absolutely. I mean, that was going to be one of the things I asked you, that whether after appearing in roles such as Time After Time and Time Bandits, whether you ever found yourself pigeonholed, but clearly
I think a lot of people think that I was pigeonholed.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is that you know, actors do different kinds of things. And if those are the films you've seen and you see me do that, that's quite natural. You'd think that that's what I do. But of course, as we've discussed just now, it's not only what I do. but these are the things that you remember.
Sure.
I mean, the point, say, you mentioned Time After Time. Well, one of the reasons I did, you know who they wanted to play Jack the Ripper in the original, and the director, Nick Meyer, had to talk Warner Brothers out of?
No.
They wanted Mick Jagger for that part.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Time After Time, it was going to be Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah.
But he wasn't available.
Okay.
So I just stepped into these films. But the point I'm making in is about those two films, which may not be part of what you're after, but I might as well say it, is the opportunity to work with my old friend Malcolm McDowell, who was at Stratford beginning his career at the same time as I was, and then suddenly to find ourselves in Hollywood was quite a strange moment. Just in human terms, not career terms, if you see what I mean. And the opportunity of working with Terry Gilliam and some of the Monty Python people was also the fun for me of doing Time Bandits, which was, that was quite a lot of comedy in Time Bandits.
That's true.
Even though as a kid you may be scared of my character, if you look at it now, he's a bit of a fun. He's a fun villain.
He is. You do play literally evil, but the thing that I always remember about Time Bandits is the dark ending where his parents touch a piece of you and they blow up, and it essentially ends with him.
Piece of coal or something.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, but, you know, you think, you go in, you know, I mean, those kind of villains or my experience of doing those I had another feeling about that when I finished the film. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it was working with Malcolm, it was working with Terry Gilliam.
So when you kind of got offered the role of Jack the Ripper, did you think that this was something completely different to what you'd been done before? And, I mean, the entire concept is, you know, roller coaster ride, essentially. It's time travel, it's serial killers. What attracted you to the role?
Actors love to work. I mean, it's not, and also, you know, I've got to be honest in all that. It's not as if I had 100 scripts piled up on my desk. So if somebody said, would you like to work with Malcolm McDowell? Would you like to work with Nicholas Meyer? Would you like to, you know, do that? It's a wonderful script, and it's a wonderful story. I said, okay, I'll do that. I mean, the villain stuff, as you happen to remember, I played Heydrich.
Yeah.
The villain stuff started really with that role. And you can't enjoy playing a character like that.
No. Because you played him twice, didn't you, Heydrich?
Well, yes, but the other one was something else. It was just, you have to pay the mortgage, you know, sure. And all that. It wasn't, but the Heydrich in the Holocaust was part of such an extraordinary tapestry of work there. That, you know, having been, I didn't want to do it when I was asked to play Heydrich, because it was he was a real person, responsible for stuff, and I was really pained. I mean, I didn't want to play it, and then I realized that if I didn't play it, somebody else would. Whatever discomfort I might feel playing it is nothing to the discomfort in history of all his victims.
That's true.
So I did it. And immediately after that, I was asked to do a thing called Masada.
Yeah.
Where again, he was the villain, and you try to give it another bit of colour, you know. And I thought, you know, this is what it's going to be. But if you've got, you know, if you don't have 100 scripts on your desk, and you have a family, and you have to just go with it sometimes.
What I've always loved about your roles, that you kind of bring a lot of nuance to them. Like when you play Jack the Ripper, you don't play him as an out-and-out psychopath. You kind of play him as someone who feels he literally is out of, not in the world he's meant to be. Like he says, 80 years ago I was a freak, today
that's right,
I'm an amateur.
That's a famous line, you know, and now I'm an amateur, and he's clicking the old remote control. You know, that was a wonderful thing to do. So you weigh up the kind of discomfort. I mean, some people love playing villains. You know, Christopher Lee you know, although he did other things, and he'd always say, by the way, I have done other things, you know.
Sure.
And I think, you know, Vincent Price or Boris Karloff or all those, you know, guys. And you find that in fact, the personalities of the actors who play villains are quite gentle creatures.
Yeah.
I mean, they who just go along with it and do it and no trouble on set, you know, and all that. And you find the people who want to play the sympathetic roles, some of them, are absolutely awful. They're monsters when you're working with them. But they don't want the public to see that.
Sure. Because I know you've just worked on Mary Poppins Returns, where obviously you're not a villain. But do you find that many casting agents or directors make the mistake that I do, and that they primarily see you as someone who's played bad guys, and that's the main image that they have in you in their mind?
Well, don't forget now, I'm 75 years old, and I'm not running around looking for work in that way, if you understand.
Yeah.
Now, I think in England, they appreciate that you know, that you can do different things. And there's a feeling that I've heard this from people where casting directors or producers, mainly, not casting directors, but some inexperienced, uncreative executives on a project will say, you can't have that actor because he plays villains and the public won't accept it. Well, that's, of course, an insult to everybody.
Sure.
I've never felt that casting directors in this country or producers also see me only as a villain. I mean, I was able to play in a Steve Martin comedy, you know, after Tron.
Sure, the man with two brains.
That's correct. So I don't feel necessarily, it's just that, of course, they may come in my direction. And I've turned down a lot. I don't really want to play, you know, child molesters and slashers and I, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't feel that I was over, how can I put, the scripts were coming in only with those things. I think people gave me the respect to know that I could do other stuff. And that also, I did when I was living in America, people would say, are you ever going to play the good guy? So I said, when my agent came up with Ninja Turtles 2,
yes.
Secret of the Ooze, I jumped at it. There I was, a friend of the heroes. So I think you're getting where I'm coming from here.
Absolutely.
You know, for every villain I've played, I've managed to play somebody who wasn't.
That's true. You have had a very varied career.
I think so. So, for example, when you mentioned Next Generation.
Yeah.
With Patrick. Again, Patrick at the beginning of his career was at Stratford-on-Avon. And by the time I got to work, I was playing Hamlet and Patrick was not, if you see what I'm trying to say. And he just joined the company and we got on well, and all that. And so years later, he's a mega star.
Mm.
And in that particular episode of The Next Generation, somebody had fallen ill and I stepped in at 3 days' notice.
Is that because you had a relationship with the producers of Star Trek, because you'd already played Ambassador Talbot?
No, I don't know about that.
Okay.
I don't think, it's not like I hang out with everybody or anything. You know, I'm one of those actors who does the job and then kind of retreats.
Sure.
I don't mean I'm antisocial, but I kind of, not very good. So I don't think I had and they were a different group, all those under the Star Trek banner. And me, I just don't know. I mean, but to have the opportunity of working with Patrick again, it's rather like, so there we go. The opportunity of working with Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
The opportunity of working with Malcolm and Nick Meyer. The opportunity of working with Patrick were influential in me taking the parts.
Ah. Speaking, you mentioned earlier you've avoided roles where you play like a slasher. Is it true that you were almost Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm
Street? No, it's not true. Please say it's not true. Everybody, not everybody, many people ask me that.
I see.
It says there's a photograph on the internet of me supposedly in the makeup of Freddy Krueger. That's not me.
It's a complete lie.
It's complete inaccuracy.
Yeah.
I won't say lie. That's, why should anybody go to those lengths, you know?
Sure.
It's just, you know, people write no, and I always have to say, no, that isn't me. I talked to George England. I met George England. And I said, did you know that I was supposed to be playing Freddy Krueger? He said, I never heard that. You know, so, you know, it's one of those things that get out there on the internet. So, yeah. No, I was never, not to my knowledge, unless I had a blackout for 6 months or something, and they put the makeup on me and I wasn't aware of it.
Well, it's good to clear that rumour up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
What I've always loved about you is that you've never been afraid to take on genres like science fiction and fantasy. Is there something that particularly attracts you to the genre, or as you said, you're just a working actor? And
no, I'm just a working actor.
I see.
I mean, some of the science fiction I've done, I haven't understood a word I've been talking about. I mean, Tron, I didn't understand a word.
It's, I mean, for 1982, the concept was incredibly out there.
Yeah.
But if we just quickly jump back to Time Bandits, where you literally play the personification of evil, how did Terry Gillingham pitch that to you?
He didn't have to pitch that to me.
No?
You mean to persuade me to do it? No, I mean, he didn't have to. You know, when my agent said, would you like to work with Terry Gilliam in Time Bandits, I just said, okay. It wasn't a question of having to be persuaded.
What was it like making that film with such a unique cast, and you're wearing that outfit that inflates? And
yeah, well, of course, the inflation was one thing, but the actual weight and discomfort of the costume and the long fingernails was not a comfortable thing to do, and you couldn't sit down. You had to have what they constructed, what they call a leaning board, so I couldn't sit down because of the costume. It was so thick.
Mm.
So I had to, in between takes, I leant backwards on this wooden thing that they constructed for me.
Okay.
In between takes. You couldn't lie down, and going to the bathroom and lavatory was quite difficult with the nails and all that kind of stuff you don't think about.
Sure.
It was a very uncomfortable costume, but for Terry Gilliam, you did it.
Yeah. And were you surprised at, you know, how big of a box office hit it was and the cult following it's got to this day?
Well, it's always lovely to suddenly find you're in a cult following film. I never think about, you know, I've worked on films where after the first day's shooting, and I'm not talking about Time Bandits or anything we're discussing, but where after the first day, my God, the cinematography, we're going to get an Oscar nomination for this and all that stuff. I never even think about that. Look, well, I made a film years ago called Morgan.
Yes.
Do you ever hear of that?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
No, okay. Where I played Morgan. And Vanessa Redgrave was in it as well. And she got nominated for an Oscar. Okay?
Yeah.
And I didn't. But it didn't mean anything to me that I didn't, because I didn't know what an Oscar was. Now, that shows how naive I am about all the trimmings and trappings of the business. So when you say, was I surprised that Time Bandits became a cult hit?
Yeah.
In a way, no, I wasn't surprised, but I never thought about it. You know, you mentioned the Titanic. Well, when we were making the Titanic, I don't know if you know Hollywood or you've been there. Have you?
I have, yes. I've been to Los Angeles, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, you have the Hollywood Reporter and Daily Variety.
Mm.
And one of the two, while the film was going over budget, they had a daily over budget report on the Titanic. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
And then when it came released, it made more money at that time than any other movie and all that. But that wasn't something that I would even think about.
Hollywood tends to do that a lot with James Cameron. Each of his films, they say, this is going to be the one that flops. This is going to be Cameron's folly. And each time, he ends up making the most successful film of all time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's fine, yeah. But it was that particular film where it was going over and over budget, and that was what the publicity, I suppose, they wanted him to fail or whatever, and he didn't. You know, the idea of, oh, my God, you know, this cinematography is going to win an Oscar is not something that, you know, I just kind of chortle quietly to myself, you know, or this is award-winning stuff, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's not really part of my brief that I've given myself as an actor.
What about when it is a film like Tron, where the technology was so groundbreaking and they were doing CGI innovation in that, that no one had done before? Was it something where you were like, I have no idea how this is going to turn out or how it's look or how it's going to look, and you put your entire faith into the directors? Or were you fascinated by what this process was going to turn out by?
No, well, I have to be honest and say, because I didn't understand what I was talking about.
Sure.
Or neither did I understand what was going on. I suppose I was a little bit curious to see how it would turn out. You are with every job you do. I wonder how it's going to turn out. But I'm not the kind of person that rushes to see myself on the screen. I just, you know, I do see myself occasionally. Yeah, with Tron, I mean, it was just, we did it from day to day. People had faith in it. It was obviously something that was going to be interesting. But again, like Time Bandits, you had no idea it was going to turn out to be what it turned out to be for fans, you know.
Yeah.
When people say Tron, oh my God, Tron, I can look at it now, and I haven't looked at it for a long time, but I can say, yes, well, that's interesting. I wonder what they see in it.
Well, I was going to say, from an acting point of view, you played the dual roles of, like, Dillinger and Sark, who are, like, the two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Was that fun to play? You kind of have more of a straight man in the real world and the megalomaniac in the...
Well, it's always good to play, you know, sort of two parts in a movie. I never really thought of it in those terms, because it wasn't like... You know, it wasn't, and I'm not denigrating the film or anything to do with it, because but it wasn't really an actor's film as such.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's fine, by the way. I have no problem with that, you know. We're hired hands, and if you accept the part, you accept the part. So I never really thought of it as, oh, this is exciting playing two characters, if that's what you're asking.
It was
part of the brief, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than, oh my goodness, I'm playing the good guy and the bad guy, and it's the same actor, you know, like Jeremy Irons or whoever might play two parts, you know,
sure,
one the goodie and the other. That wasn't really going on in my mind at all. It was, again, and I'm not being patronising or flip here. I mean, I am a jobbing actor, and it was another job in another genre that came up, and I thought, oh, I'm in another genre. This is fantastic. You know, I mean, I can say to you, I've done westerns, I've done war movies, I've now done a musical.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I've done comedy and I've done horror and I've, you know, and this is wonderful. That's what an actor does.
Are you surprised? I mean, like you said, you didn't understand what was going on with Tron and it didn't do well at the box office, but it's one of those films that it's just grown, the following's grown over time. Is that probably one of the films that people want to talk to you the most about? Are you surprised at
it? It is one of the films. I mean, I think you know there are conventions that actors go to meet the fan people.
Yeah.
And Tron is a very popular one. You know, but I have to say, I say to them what I'm saying to you, you know, I didn't understand what was going on. You know, I didn't really understand it. But not only because of the CGI or the, you know, the pre-CGI visual effects, I knew nothing about computers, or even though it was at the birth of the computer.
Sure.
I had no idea, the birth of the public computer. I had no idea about that either. It was really a question of being guided. This is where, as Robert Mitchum used to say, who I admired tremendously when I watched him, and I did actually work briefly with him.
Oh, fantastic.
Where he said, just put me in the suit and point me. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
I'll just do the very best I can.
Speaking about the roles you did in Star Trek, obviously you've played the Klingon Chancellor in Star Trek VI, where you're kind of like the Klingon version of Gorbachev, trying to bring...
Gorbachev and Abraham Lincoln with the beard was, I think, the idea, yeah.
But then on the flip side, when you played Gol Madred in Chain of Command, I remember seeing you in that and it terrified me at how you played the character and that he's so detached, especially that scene where he brings his daughter in. It's kind of like, bring your child to work day, and Patrick Stewart's strapped there to a chair being tortured, and you dehumanize him by going, humans don't care about their children the way we do. How did you research that role? Or, like you said, because you were literally thrown in at the last moment, you just read the lines and...
You know all about that, that I read the line. You know all about how we shot that, do you?
I've heard cue cards might have been involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I have no secret there. There was no way I could learn that stuff.
Okay.
In 3 days. So people were holding cue cards all over the place for me. It was a wonderful experience to see a whole crew, including Patrick, holding a cue card for me, knowing that, the you know, it wasn't like I turned up and said, oh, my God, I can't. I had to tell them, look, I can't learn it. You understand what I'm saying there? So the whole production was geared to help me.
That's
wonderful. With planning and notice. It wasn't an actor walking on not knowing his lines. That's very clear, I hope, to you.
Oh, absolutely. No. Because you were a last-minute replacement, absolutely.
Yeah. And so that's the way that went. If you think of Heydrich, you know that I played this monster.
Yeah.
Okay? He loved classical music. He loved literature. He had a family. He wrote love letters to his wife. Right?
Yeah.
And yet he was one of the most evil men in history.
It's the whole evil doesn't wear an evil face, you know, everyone
is... Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There are people who can love and have families and love their children and, as I said, you know, play classical music and it's, I don't know, I can't explain it. It's something I don't like to think about too much. But, you know, if you... and I didn't heavily think about that during working with Patrick, so... However it comes out, it's one of those, that extraordinary things that worked.
I think Patrick Stewart is on record as saying it's probably one of the scenes he's most proud of working with you on that episode, and that the two of you, because you had worked before, you had a dynamic. So he was willing to, I think, strip completely naked for that scene because he trusted you as an actor and the relationship that you two have.
Well, it's lovely to hear that. I hadn't heard that, so thank you for telling me. It's really lovely to hear that.
Thanks, Ty and David Warner. That conversation continued for some time, but if you want more of that, then you'll have to get Ty's book, Born to be Bad. We seem to have a fair few new subscribers, so hello everyone, it's lovely to have your company, and we'll see you all tomorrow for Christmas Eve. The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.